You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together. Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. So I'm going to kind of pick up a little bit where I left off in the last podcast when we discussed the history of the Dynamo Club and their influence upon our programming. So a common question that I get in terms of how we structure our programs is, why not run just a West Side template? So for those unfamiliar with it, West Side typically has max effort lower on day one, max effort upper on day two. Volume will be low on these days, intensity obviously pretty high. And then they'll have their dynamic effort upper and dynamic effort lower for days three and four. So where the volume's higher, the intensity's lower. And they kind of run everything in 3 week waves. So typically what they might do is week one might be 55% plus 25% bands. So that's going to put you into that like 80% range. With the addition of 55 plus 25, that's 80, right? And then following week 60, following week 65%. And they run 5x5s now, but they've done everything from 12x2s in the past up to the 5x5s now. So in like some of the older templates that I've seen on West Side, it kind of goes 12x2, goes up in weight 10x2, up in weight 8x2. And then they were taking singles on the deadlift, so anywhere between 6 and 10 singles, where now they do the 5x5 on deadlifts. And interestingly enough, when I had asked Louis why he had switched up the deadlifts, it was because of the conversation that he had with Shaco and deadlift volume. So when the second time Shaco came to America, so the second seminar he did where I was working at the time, he had gone to West Side before. And him and Louis spent a whole day together talking about training and stuff. And so Shaco was talking about the deadlift volumes, and Louis changed the amount of deadlift volume he uses based off of that conversation. And interestingly enough, and this kind of applies to the podcast that I'm doing here, when I asked Shaco what the difference between him and Louis was, he said the emphasis of training for Louis was on strength, and for him it was on technique. So if you think about the methods of strength training, right? So Louis's using the dynamic effort method on the repetition day. So he's putting bands on there plus bar weight because he's trying to improve speed strength. So there's a strength quality he's trying to improve there. Now, of course, he can alternate bar weight and band tension to then work on a slower power, let's say, and use it as strength speed. And you can use it on max effort day and still train for the absolute strength quality, which you can do with straight weight and changing bars and all the stuff that he does. Anyway, so like those methods of strength training, he's looking at developing those physiological aspects of producing force. Where Shaco's going to look at it more from a technical standpoint. So he's looking at it more through efficiency. So he's going to use the method, the submaximal effort method, which actually ties in with the dynamic effort method when you look in science and practices. So he's going to use that with a lot more sets, a lot more repetitions. And his focus is not so much going to be on how fast you're moving to build certain explosiveness or using accommodating resistance to build certain strength qualities. For him, it's going to be using certain special exercises, as he calls them, so variations within the lifts, to work on that technical efficiency aspect and to continuously just practice it over and over and over again. So you're going to see a higher frequency and more volume of the competition lifts themselves in a Shaco program. So for us, when we were running a Shaco program, the problem was we didn't take enough heavy singles. So people were getting nervous when we had to test. And because of the nervousness, technique would break down, performance would suffer, meets were not as enjoyable. So I had determined that using the max effort method becomes an important part of a training program. So we started using that, but then you get the why not just do a West Side program? Well, when you actually like look into, so when you read articles in Powerlifting USA, some of the old articles in there, you read the Book of Methods, or you listen to Louis talk, or even the people who trained at West Side, listen to them talk about their training. They were constantly changing up training. So like I remember when I had this light bulb moment, I think I was listening to a podcast with J.M. Blakely, and he was talking about his bench training. And he was talking about this like 6x6 training he did. I might fuck up explaining this, but it'll get the point across. So he put a weight on there and he would do it until he could get all 36 reps at that weight. He could do 6 sets of 6. And then he'd go up in weight and kind of repeat the process until he could get 6 sets of 6. And then that's kind of how he did his bench training. And then you hear stories about like George Halpert, Kenny Patterson, Chuck Vogelpohl, how they would manipulate training using the same methods, but manipulate training to kind of fit their needs a little bit more. And I thought to myself, well, if the structure of the West Side program stays the same and they have to change it, maybe it's inevitable it has to change anyways. So like variability is extremely important. So one of the things that was beat into me earlier on by Shaco was the importance of load variability. So, you know, in the beginning, you think of it as like a day-to-day fluctuation of loads between high, medium, and low stress training days. But then over time, you start seeing the bigger picture and you start realizing that maybe I got to manipulate the training a little bit differently. So this is where our phases came into play. So when Louis talks about the Dynamo Club, the weightlifting club that I had mentioned on the previous podcast, when they did their training, the Russian conjugate sequential systems actually block periodization. So they set it up in blocks. So they would use the same variation for an entire block. And then when you read some of the older West Side stuff, they actually would use the same, this is what it sounds like anyways, they would use the same variation for 2 weeks. And they realized that if you tried to use it for a third week, it kind of lost its effects, its training effects. So you get 2 weeks with an exercise where you can probably increase performance, but beyond that, you're kind of rolling the dice, and it's probably the juice isn't worth the squeeze at that point. So then I started thinking about the concepts that Shaco taught about the repetitions and the practicing stuff and the technical efficiency. And then I thought about the Dynamo Club and how they utilized variations to attack weaknesses, and that they started way more general and worked its way up into something more specific. And that the coaches of that weightlifting club would assess each lifter for strengths and weaknesses and use those exercises to attack certain weaknesses. So I wanted to apply all of those concepts. I remember, so when I had this conversation with Shaco, and he's like, oh, Louis' main focus is strength, mine is technique. Why can't it be both? That's like the first thing that kind of went through my head. Why can't it be both? Like, to me, it definitely can be both. So what I decided to do was, we have 2 weeks we can use a max effort exercise that we can increase performance. How can we stretch that out? And what can we focus on to be able to stretch it out? So this is where the idea of us using week one max effort lift, following week reps based off of that max effort, and then the following week a max effort lift again, and then week four becomes a deload using 80% comp lifts. So 80% is kind of that load that's not really that taxing, but it's enough weight where you can start to see things. So hopefully over time in those 4 weeks, we see the competition lifts at 80% look better, get easier, and we can add a little bit of weight, whatever we're doing. They're kind of just this review of progress, so to speak. And one of the reasons why I wanted to add that in was, you know, hearing stories about guys training at Westside and needing to take easier weeks, easier days. And they kind of would just do it when they needed to do it, it sounded like. But I wanted to be a little bit more proactive, because I don't have elite lifters that are coming and starting to train with me. Typically, they're beginners, and we got to build them up. And in the course of building them up, it's about teaching a training skill, making sure they understand how training works, what to look for in training, what the goal of each day is, how to make these decisions. And it takes a long time to get somebody up to a point where they know what they should be doing on each and every single day. And I'm talking a couple of years. And then when they get to that point, they get a little bit more freedom. Louis just tends to get these guys when they kind of understand training enough. They're already elite lifters. So they kind of are able to be thrown in and make these decisions. So for us, and the whole, and interestingly enough, we'll do, so week one max effort, when we do the week two, I typically use 70% for a 5x5. That's where Louis starts his dynamic waves at. Shaco would use those days like that, 70%, we get 5x5s, 5x6s, stuff like that. So it just seemed like a volume that others found to be very useful. It's the only reason why we use it. So, and this all stems from our rep days have 50 lifts in them. So when you look at a Westside program, that's what they have on their dynamic lower day. Shaco in his programs, when he did like a squat pyramid or had a high stress training day, for me, there was approximately 50 lifts in that day. So it just seems like both of them used similar volumes for high stress training days. So I just kind of started it from there, and then we kind of just worked backwards, and then you just kind of pay attention. But when I was thinking about how constantly these guys had to change things up, where, you know, and even Louis talked about like when the dynamic effort, when bench would stall out, he would do sets of eight or these like different training methods that he would add into those days just to kind of stimulate some more growth, whether it was with hypertrophy strength, whatever. So for us, that's where I decided to have phases where we change the frequency of the lifts. So our phase one is just a typical upper lower split. Phase two, we start to get a little bit more higher frequency stuff at the end of the week. So another thing that I, you know, just from being around and you see people doing these things where someone might run something like Smolov for a brief period of time just to really drive some high levels of stimulus to try to get you over this little plateau, this little hump or something like that. So I wanted to kind of utilize that in a way that was just planned and more productive. So higher frequency training definitely has some beneficial aspects. So typically, what you start to see, so let's say you get somebody doing, I'm just gonna make this shit up, but you get somebody doing a Westside template, and they're like, man, this stopped working. And here's the thing, as long as the program follows principles and it includes those methods of training, those methods of strength training, it's going to work. So chances are if they're running a Westside template and it stops working, it's just because they're not picking the right exercises to do to actually target their weaknesses, which can be very difficult. And I think this is one of the biggest benefits of having a coach, being able to analyze what you're doing. And let's say they go to a high frequency, very comp lift driven program, right? Like a Russian style or a DUP type of program where they're just, they squat bench, they bench deadlift, they squat bench, you know, so the frequency is much, much higher. The volume is much, much higher. What happens here is this higher frequency drives work capacity. So if you want to get stronger, you have to do more work. Now, typically what you see a lot of times is in these situations here, it drives work capacity up so high that you see these large increases in progress in a very short amount of time. So when we think of overtraining, I think a lot of times we'll think of overtraining as it just being this like, oh, all of a sudden 1 week you're really tired and your lifts start to go down and you get these nagging things or whatever it may be. And of course, some of those things definitely do apply. But overtraining, what ends up happening is you may not necessarily feel super beat up. You may not have signs and symptoms, but progress is going to stall really, really hard. And at some point, there's probably a breaking point where you're going to see progress go backwards and or an injury occur. So you improve work capacity in this giant spike. But then remember, if we want to continue to get better, we have to continue to do more work. So you'll see, so let's say you're using percentages because this is just easy to see this way. So you're using percentages, you just keep hitting these huge PRs. So the 70% number is just increasing and increasing and increasing. At some point when it starts to plateau, it's going to be really hard to improve your work capacity. There's just nowhere to really go for it. And then what ends up happening is you get this accumulative overtraining and you kind of get stuck at that spot. So I think it's important. I think higher frequency stuff has a lot of benefits. Like you saw, you know, that person switching from a Westside to a Russian style template, all of a sudden they hit these huge PRs and stuff and then it stalls out. So I think there's some benefits into, or like I said before, using that small log thing for a brief moment in time. So I do think there's some benefits to adding some higher frequency stuff in. So we'll do that at the end of the week. So now on day three, we'll do some sub-max bench work. And then the deadlift max effort will rotate with reps each week. And then the squats and deadlift volume will be on day four. So the other part too is when you run a higher frequency program, you can put a ton on your total because your work capacity increases. But the problem is the second you stop those methods, the strength is just gonna go away. And it's because your work capacity was so high. It's hard to maintain that sprint long term too. So if you ever have to pull back with the amount of work you're doing, you're just gonna see a massive decrease in your ability to lift. And this just basically comes because that higher frequency program raises your work capacity too fast. So it raises it so fast, you're gonna have that initial success, and then it just becomes too much and your body becomes overtrained. You need to actually work your work capacity. You need to increase your work capacity over time. And if you do that, your total will go up and the top end weights tend to be a lot more stable. So this is where I think the benefit of like GPP stuff, but at the same time, having that frequency in there and you get that blast of work capacity, that's why we use it on phase two. And then when we get into phase three of our training, so it's more based off of the Bulgarian method. So Angel Spasov, who was a sports scientist for the Bulgarian weightlifting team, talked about the max effort method being the only method to improve, to get us ultra high levels of performance. But the problem with it is it comes with burnout and it shortens careers. So again, I think with the high frequency stuff, you got to pick your spots. And also with the high frequency, with the high frequency volume stuff, you gotta pick your spots. And also with the high frequency, higher intensity stuff, you gotta pick your spots with that as well. So I like phase one because we just do way less max effort lifts and there's a lot of GPP, so it's kind of set up in a way where we can still kind of focus on the foundation for a couple of months, build up some weak areas, let the brain kind of recover from the psychological stress of a lot of max effort lifts so that we don't have that psychological burnout and that we don't have the shortening of careers. And then we move into the higher frequency type of lifting. And in that higher frequency lifting, what we get there is increased work capacity. Again, these things, there's limited amounts of time that these things are successful for. So we're not getting too much, but we're still getting that stimulus. And then we become more specific with the max effort, getting more max effort lifts. So the higher frequency stuff, because we still do in phase two, the max effort lifts, those week twos when we're doing reps, it's basically, you know, you're squatting day one, let's say you're doing a 70% 5x5 bench in day two, 75% 5x4. And then you're doing 80% for some triples on the bench, followed by a 5x5, 70% deadlift. And then the following day, you're doing 50 squats and deadlifts. So you're getting a lot more frequency thrown in there in that phase two. And then in phase three, we take the Bulgarian method and squats and bench are max effort every single week. Deadlift still rotates. So the volume's going down in terms of the number of lifts in a given cycle, but the number of max effort lifts has gone up. So we're kind of just picking our spots between the Russian system and the Bulgarian system and putting it all together. So what I think it does is it gives structure to lifters that don't necessarily have the same training skill yet to be able to identify when changes need to be made to the actual structure of the program. That when we might need some higher volume to replace max effort, or when we might need more singles to replace higher volume stuff. And I just think with the load variability piece, I think it's important to kind of fluctuate these things over a longer term to keep a healthier lifter, to keep a more engaged lifter, and just to keep the stimulus fresh for the body to continuously adapt, where you see Westside has to do it anyways. They just kind of pick their spots based off of how progress is occurring with each lifter. We just kind of structure it in the program itself. I think, you know, there's a reason why West Side works really well at West Side, and then when people try to run it outside of West Side, it doesn't work quite as well. There's a reason why Shaco is so successful running his programs, but when other people, which this I know for a fact because this was me, try to run his programs, you just don't have the same levels of success. And it's because we bring a different perspective. We don't have the same eyes and the same intuition. And it's their programs are their intuition. It's an extension of their personal selves. So for me, I try to take, you know, the influences of each of them, of what I've learned from each of them, obviously by being coached by Shaco and a student of his for 3 years, and then having some phone conversations and hanging out at Westside for a weekend and reading Powerlifting USA and the Book of Methods, and then the history of the sport, the Dynamo Club, the Bulgarian weightlifting teams, the sports science that goes with it, and taking this and understanding that the foundation of it's just those that basic knowledge, the methods of strength training, the principles. All good programs follow the same principles. It's just how they piece them together is where the art is, and where the different perspectives and the practical application come out, and that's how we get different programs. But I think we live in an age where we're internet educated, so we don't know the foundational pieces to it because we don't go to the original books and read the actual foundational principles and then use our own perspectives to practically apply those principles to programs that become an extension of our personal selves. And I think that's where we run into trouble as coaches and as lifters, is we're like, oh, this person's doing this, so I want to do this. And then we start doing it without really understanding the concepts. And so then you start training or start coaching people based off of these concepts, but you don't know how to make those adaptations. And I think the benefit of any program is going to be how you adapt to it. And not necessarily like, oh, if I do this exercise, I'm going to adapt in a given way. It's life fucking happens when you're going through these programs, and you need to understand that foundation, those foundational principles, to be able to adjust and adapt to your ever-changing needs when you're in the gym. Because there's this fine line between training really hard and being fucking stupid. And we want to walk that fine line as much as humanly possible. And you can't really do that if you don't understand how the system works, the foundational principles that back the ideas within the programming. So this other, I'm going to start to ramble here. But this other piece of it too is when a program stops working, we want to grab another program because we think the program is what drives results. And when we do this, we never learn the nuances, the spaces between the spaces, and that's where elite level performance is found. It's found in the spaces between the spaces. But if you're doing a program and it stops working for you because you think the program is supposed to work for you, when it's really you work for the program, you'll switch to somebody else's, you'll start running that, you're a forever beginner. So you never really learn those nuances, you never really get in those spaces where you can learn those fine line details that are really important to high level success. And I think that's a problem with the culture of powerlifting now. It's very young. We've lost the history of the sport. And we expect the program to work for us. And it doesn't really work that way. So for me, understanding the methods and how they work, seeing how people like Louis and Shaco and the Bulgarians applied those methods, and then putting my own personal perspective on it. So the skill acquisition piece, to me, it's not so much as just doing reps for the sake of doing reps. There's the way that skill acquisition works, and I think this is where the majority of the progress has been made in our foundational knowledge since the 70s. We haven't really learned much in terms of physiological adaptations to training since the 1970s. The 70s was the golden age of learning this stuff. But we have, since technology improved somewhere, I want to say around the 1990s, and we're starting to understand brain functioning a little bit more and how skills are acquired, I think we can kind of take some of those aspects that others have utilized and improve upon it. So, and if we don't rush, right, if we're patient, we understand that we can train multiple things at once, and that each day isn't in itself super important, but it's the committed consistency of each training day that is, we can focus on strength one day, technique on another, and if we stay with it, and we make good decisions, and we do all these things, you start to see technique and strength improve. And of course, they're interconnected because it's the same person. So, like, the psychological aspects of training are going to affect technique and your ability to apply force. So we got to work on those things too. And if you have a weak muscle group, of course it's going to affect technique, especially as weights get heavier. So if you're focusing on that weak muscle group and you're really targeting it with accessories and special exercises, and that gets better, technique is going to get better. But at the same time, there are still neurological adaptations to be able to strain under heavier weights that need to be adapted. So there's going to be breakdown at times. It doesn't matter, because those days are used to drive neurological adaptations to be able to produce force, not so much efficiency at that point in time. So it's just being patient, putting all things together. And I think, you know, like I said, having a program that kind of targets all these different, like if you think of it, our first phase, we'll keep the same exercise in there because, like I said, the 2 weeks. And I think for them being able to kind of focus on a particular angle, weakness, whatever it is really important. We don't deadlift heavy in that first phase either. It's just all some maximal reps, because a lot of the people that I've talked to that have been around a long time said that they had wished that they had deadlifted less. Nobody says, oh, I wish I had lifted heavy more. So, but it also sets it up almost like in a West Side upper lower split. Lots of GPP work, like the Russians would start you out on earlier in your career. So it gives you that foundational base. And then the Russians would do less general, more specific type stuff. I explained this in the last podcast too. So we start to get that in our phase two. And of course, we're still using the variations. And then in our phase three, we kind of use the Bulgarian method a lot more heavy singles, volumes a little bit less, because that's what drives ultra high performance. And leading into a meet, that's what we want. And then we'll back off again and cycle back through and change exercises and find different ways and pay attention. And over time, you can start to see these things start to develop. So it's kind of utilizing all of these three systems in one particular place, and just listening to the experiences of others practically apply these principles, and planning ahead for the things that they've had to do. So hearing a lot of guys who trained at Westside and even Louis talk about having to change things up at times in terms of what they're doing in their training. It's not always 9x3 on bench with whatever, doing speed bench. It sounds like there are a lot of times where they change things up quite a bit. So it's just almost taking that information and just applying it within the programs themselves. So trying to keep all these a little shorter here too. So I'm going to wrap this one up now. And we'll get into maybe the weeds of some of these programs a little bit more and the history of them. And I think the next one I'll do is I'll compare the conjugate sequential system that the Dynamo Club used and compare it to Westside's conjugate system, so you can see the differences that there are there. So you get two more examples of how, you know, the Dynamo Club influenced Louis, but how Louis practically applies those same principles in a very different way to match the needs of his lifters. And I think these examples are great to learn from. But for now, stay strong, Boston.